We'll go on to case number 2, appeal 03-3004, United States v. Corey Smith.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Mr. Potter, Peter Cohen on behalf of appellant Corey Allen Smith. Where I'd like to start, if it pleases the court, is with the supplemental brief, which was filed yesterday, which concerns a Blakely issue regarding my clients receiving a sentencing enhancement for obstruction of justice under 3C1.1 or under the sentencing guidelines. What happened in this case, during trial, my client took the witness stand. He testified in opposite to what some of the government witnesses testified to, and was convicted. Subsequent to trial, the court expressed this concern that it felt my client may have committed perjury, invited briefs from the parties, received the pre-sentence report, and then invited briefs from the parties, and then eventually did impose a two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice, alleging that Mr. Smith's finding, and actually in rather extensive findings, that Mr. Smith did commit perjury at trial.
Mr. Cohn, because time is so short, I'd like to just start asking you some questions.
Sure, yes,
ma'am. Because the majority opinion in Blakely, and of course we're all working on this unpainted canvas, seems to me, but because the majority opinion in Blakely still speaks in terms of statutory maximums and factual findings that increase those maximums, for the most part, the sentencing guidelines don't increase anyone's statutory maximum, do they?
No, they do not, Your Honor.
And the obstruction enhancement that Mr. Smith received certainly didn't.
It did not exceed the statutory
right.
maximum. That's correct, Your Honor.
So?
But my submission to the court is that Blakely stated in the majority opinion that any element that that basically my understanding of Blakely and its interpretation of Apprendi was that the relevant statutory maximum is that which is found by the jury or admitted by a defendant. In other words, the jury found Mr. Smith guilty of a possession with intent and a conspiracy count in count 2.
Would you agree that our standard of review here it would be for plain error?
Well, Your Honor, my position is that it should be reviewed de novo, although in the government's brief they pointed out that this particular objection was not raised at the lower court. Of course, there was an objection raised, not this particular objection. Now, being a practitioner who does a lot of federal criminal work at the trial level, I wouldn't have thought to have made this objection. Now, whether that excuses or changes the standard of review, but I don't think anybody would have thought to make this particular objection. But I think even if it's for plain error, if somebody is deprived of a jury trial, which the Supreme Court noted in its opinion that there's no reason why a person who is going to be found guilty of perjury should not be allowed to have that proven to a jury.
So I sort of take it that you may be agreeing that given the uncertainty about what Blakely means for the sentencing guidelines, the obstruction enhancement in this case wouldn't constitute plain error, although I understand that that wouldn't be your argument in any event, but at least you'd agree, I take it.
Yes, ma'am.
With me on that, yeah.
It was noted in the Supreme Court opinion in addressing Justice O'Connor's dissent that if there's no reason why a perjury submission should not be submitted to a jury rather than found by a judge in a separate trial, and that was in footnote 11.
What do you say about footnote 9 in Blakely?
Judge, off the top of my head, I don't recall what footnote 9 is.
Unless the federal guidelines are not before us and we express no opinion on it.
Well, and Judge, that is true that the court did state that. However, But the court also said, at the same time, it's the same effect as the. I'm not familiar with the Washington State guideline system, but the Blakely received an enhancement for conduct that the court found, which the Supreme Court has now said he should have gotten a jury trial on, and the sentencing guidelines have the same effect. So I don't know. It would be our position, Your Honor.
Well, you've read the government's supplemental brief in this matter, I assume. They cite numerous cases which have upheld the constitutionality of the guidelines, and which presumably have to be overruled to go your way, wouldn't they?
Well, presumably, Your Honor, I think this case caught a lot of courts and practitioners by surprise, but the holding of the court, to me, seems clear that anything that increases that the relevant statutory maximum is that found by the jury, and a defendant is entitled to a jury trial, to anything beyond that. Now, I think some of the dissenters in Blakely expressed concern that this case may wreak havoc on the judicial system and the judicial process. And, you know, Judge, I don't know what the long-term effects or how the courts are ultimately going to interpret it. I'm just advocating, you know, for an individual client.
Well, I guess my point is, should we wait to see how the Supreme Court develops this problem, or should we lunge into the middle of it and try to do it ourselves?
Well, Judge, I can only propose to the court an interpretation of what the Supreme Court said as to my client, and as I interpret the case, the judge exceeded that statutory maximum found by the jury by imposing the perjury enhancement, and that Mr. Smith, under Blakely, would be entitled to a jury trial to make the findings that he committed the offense of perjury beyond a reasonable doubt, rather than the district court making a finding.
Even though no statutory maximum was implicated in his case?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be our position, that the statutory maximum is set now by Apprendi and Blakely, and that the statutory maximum is that found by the jury verdict. That's our position, Your Honor.
You're saying that Apprendi is history and we should move on with that?
Well, you know, when Apprendi came down, it caused a lot of excitement, and then it was sort of toned down a little bit. But I think the way that Blakely has now interpreted...
You don't think that will happen with Blakely, though? You don't think the same process will apply to Blakely as apparently applied to...
Well, Judge, I hope not, and I think there's a lot of... defendants out there who hope not either.
You know, we have some important issues that came up before you knew you'd be arguing Blakely here.
Yes, ma'am.
And I would like to ask you if you are sure that the Brady Giglio claim is one that Mr. Smith wishes to pursue on direct appeal without a more developed record about the terms of Mr. Grant's plea bargain.
Your Honor, I think that Mr. Potter has pointed out in his brief that I probably should have raised that, or it should have been raised at the trial court initially, or I should have raised it as a different under a different issue, such as it was misleading to the jury to represent that Mr. Grant had no agreement with the government. But as the record as it stands now, it might be better if it was brought up on a better developed record with some further testimony as what
in a section 2255.
Yes, ma'am. It may be.
Okay. So
premature.
Then, are you withdrawing that argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Okay.
And the only other issues, Your Honor, which I raised was sufficiency of the evidence, and I will leave that. I know that's not a favorite of the court, but I will leave that to the brief to expound on that. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen. Morning, Mr. Potter.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jonathan Potter for the United States. The United States' position is that Blakely does not apply to the federal sentencing guidelines. And there are really four cases that really show this. First of all, Blakely itself in footnote 9 stated that the Supreme Court is not making a decision regarding the guidelines and applying Blakely to the guidelines.
Of course, that just means that there wasn't a federal guidelines case likely wasn't a federal guideline case.
That's correct, Your Honor.
It may be a federal guideline case.
It may be. But then if you look at Apprendi, at footnote 21, they say we do not have a guideline case before us.
Well,
but
hold on for one second and forgive me. But the dissenters in Blakely seemed to think that there were no meaningful differences between the Washington State sentencing guideline and the federal sentencing guideline. So is there a meaningful distinction for purposes of Blakely?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, from what I understand about the Washington guidelines, those were statutorily drawn. Our guidelines are not statutorily drawn. They're drawn up by a commission where Congress has given them the power to draw up guidelines as long as they don't...
But why would it matter, for example, that the state legislature in Blakely had established the sentencing ranges, whereas here the sentencing commission has done so?
But they haven't, Your Honor. Really, Congress has set the sentencing ranges, in this case 5 to 40 years.
So that's what you think is important, that Congress has the right to overrule any sentencing guideline it doesn't like?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Apprendi, footnote 21, Your Honors, in that case, and the same people dissented in Apprendi as did in Blakely, and the majority in Apprendi said, no, we're not attacking the sentencing guidelines, and we rely on a case called Edwards, which they cited with approval. Edwards upheld the sentencing guidelines as far as the maximum punishment. Yes, Your Honor.
Would you agree that there was a great deal of discourse between the majority and the dissenting opinions in Blakely that would suggest that the days of the federal sentencing guidelines may be numbered?
Your Honor, the discourse between the two sides, frankly, there was a lot of discourse going back and forth. It's odd they didn't cite Edwards, neither the majority opinion nor any of the dissenters cited Edwards, but Edwards is still good law according to Apprendi, which, of course, both sides did cite. So it would seem to be that Edwards is still good law. As to the two-point enhancement in this case, the Supreme Court has also addressed that in Dunnigan and found that a two-point enhancement is appropriate for obstruction of justice, just like this case. So from those aspects, it appears the guidelines, according to the Supreme Court, are still good, despite the dissent conversation with the majority about the possibility that the guidelines are no longer supportable after Blakely. This court, of course, is not the Supreme Court, and we ask that you allow the Supreme Court to make these determinations, whether Blakely is applicable to the sentencing guidelines. As far as the other issues, the government will rest on its brief, unless there are any questions.
I'd like to ask you a question about that, the so-called other issues. the basic claim here is, of course, that there was a Brady violation in not disclosing the benefits that were extended to this witness. Grant, I guess his name was. As I understand your brief, you're asking us, on the record that's before us now, to decide that there was no Brady violation. The alternative, of course, would be to say that that's more appropriate for a 2255 proceeding where we can find out what the facts are. Now, do I understand you're saying we ought to decide it now, or should we defer it?
Well, Your Honor, the government does not believe that the defendant has brought forth evidence of any Brady violation. The fact that Mr. Grant received a 5K after he testified is not evidence of a Brady violation. But yes, if the court is concerned that there may be a Brady violation, we would ask that it be handled in a 2255 rather than...
Well, for example, there was a lot of, I think, what we call it confusion about Grant testifying that he hoped the government wouldn't bring up his past felony. But of course, at the time he testified, the government had not filed what it had to file to bring it up, so that was, it was more than a hope, it was a done deal.
Yes, Your Honor.
Nobody ever corrected the record on that point, I don't believe.
I don't believe so either, but the important thing Mr. Grant made clear, he was going to receive was that the government wouldn't file an information and double a sentence for his prior conviction.
Well, but he sort of he not only implied, he stated, I guess, that they still could if they didn't.
Right. Yes, and the government was withholding the filing or not filing until after Mr. Grant testified, because the government wanted to make sure Mr. Grant was testifying truthfully. If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
And, of course, the case will be taken under advisement, but Mr. Cohn and Mr. Potter, you have the thanks of the court for your really fine supplemental filings under really very difficult circumstances, and thank you very, very much.
Mr. Potter, did you actually produce this brief in only a few hours?
Yes, Your Honor, because the government employees were working on it Sunday and Monday.
Very well done.
That's a pretty good job for a couple of hours.
As was yours, Mr. Cohen.
So was yours, Mr.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.